Hi, this is Morgan Michael welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness. I believe that we all have an innate need to be seen, heard, and understood. When we dedicate ourselves to kindness, the ripple effects in our schools can be life-changing. Through this podcast, I want to challenge you to question your assumptions, amplify your insight, and embrace a willingness to go beyond the status quo in education. Together, let's learn how to make a big impact, one small act at a time. Have you ever wondered how you can easily earn the respect and trust of parents in an authentic way that doesn't compromise your integrity? My guest has some incredible insight to share with you today. In our conversation, we discuss the importance of building rapport, creating judgment-free zones for moms, encouraging parent communities that favor teamwork and generosity over competition, and the significance of creating a safe space to navigate some of life's controversial conversations. My guest, Shauna Stewart Douglas, is the founder and CEO of Momble, a safe, non-judgmental social community for moms and moms-to-be. They are dedicated to moms supporting each other in this epic and sometimes roller coaster-like journey called motherhood. She also heads up a number of Moms Uniting Moms groups on Facebook and can be found on Instagram by searching Momble Moms. Check her out at www.mombl.com. In case you want further information about Shauna and her amazing projects, check out my website, smallactbigimpact.com, and search for episode 31. Thank you so much for listening. I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes and leave a review. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to have you on here, Shauna. It's such a pleasure to be talking to you and to be able to delve into some of these ideas together.
Likewise. Thank you so much for reaching out.
Yeah. So I'd like to start by rewinding back to 2012, 2013. Even before you had actually given birth to your daughter, Naomi, you personally experienced mommy shaming or your first exposure to, quote, the mommy wars. And that social conflict was really characterized by this endless criticism, second guessing, competition, and even just meanness, like outright meanness that seems to characterize aspects of parenthood, especially between mothers and some of the larger communities, of course. And so I'd love to explore your own experience with mom shame and how that made you take notice of the way that mothers and society treat mothers, and to explore the possibilities of change making at the grassroots level. So essentially leading you into this first Mommy Wars project through Mothering Touch. Can you speak to that and your experience?
Sure. I think that I first started to really experience the mommy shaming and those pieces coming to the forefront, like you said, was when I became pregnant. And suddenly I went from being this autonomous being, you know, moving through the world, through work and through my relationships and all those various things. In some ways, your body almost becomes like this public domain somehow. And that started to become really clear. People not just commenting on your body. I mean, I know lots of people say, you know, very kind things, and it's just, they're just curious and they're trying to find some, you know, some common ground. And so they want to talk to you. But I just started noticing that I was getting a lot of advice around what I was eating and what I wasn't eating and what vitamins I was taking. I was standing in line to get on a flight, and this man came up to me and started talking to me about my diet and different if I was taking this vitamin or not, and I wasn't actually. So I got this great big lecture about the harm I was doing to my unborn child. So I ended up, I mean, it generally comes from a place of wanting to help, but I felt like I was on a stage in some ways.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think I felt that too as a mom, and it's kind of surprising when you first experience it, because it, I mean, on some level, it's nice to have all these people you know, wishing well, giving well wishing for your child. But you're right. There's sort of this undercurrent of judgment and this expectation of how things should be and how you already might be doing it wrong.
Yes. And that somehow you're supposed to take it. Like you're supposed to take it in. You're supposed to understand that this is now a, that this pregnancy is now open to, you know, public input.
Yes.
and that, yeah, now this is going to be a group effort and everyone's going to have their input.
And can you talk a little bit about your Mommy Wars project? And I'm always so interested when people go from sort of having a problem to solve, which I'd say in this case, it's sort of maybe educating people on the fact that we don't all need to conform to one vision of motherhood or parenthood, and that really it's really important to be able to value and validate different paths on the journey to motherhood. So can you speak to that a little bit and how you went from sort of being inspired and maybe even bothered at first and then and cultivating that and creating this project that really was geared toward changing that whole perspective and that paradigm?
Absolutely. So I first started the community shortly after my daughter was born. So that was in 2012. And very quickly I realized that, you know, as more moms were starting to join the community, I kind of came around to the awareness that a lot of what my effort was going to come down to was going to be in facilitating a space where information sharing and constructive discourse could happen. So even outside of, you know, the participation in it, which of course was very important to me and valuable to me, I was realizing that some of the pieces, you know, of this puzzle, what needed to be there and what needed to not be there in order to make this discussion ongoing and rich and safe and to keep the communication going. So I became really fascinated in essentially what that system was going to look like and what pieces needed to be there and what pieces I needed to kind of cultivate. And so as time went on, I just kind of kept on trying various different things. And sometimes I was a little bit more involved, sometimes less, you know, adding this and that and those kinds of things. So then as time went on, I started to build a little bit of momentum. And I was online, of course, because I was, you know, fascinated in all these kinds of things. And I came across a couple of different projects and a couple of different things that people were doing online. And one of the things I had been thinking about was that, in addition to the fact that we were creating this space that was quite safe and people were feeling really good about it and that the conversations that were happening were really helping people, and I was getting a lot of feedback that that this space really was helping people feel supported, not only during, you know, their days and with their questions, but in the middle of the night when they were feeling particularly lonely. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that, is there a way that we could mark this somehow, say in some kind of big marquee way, that this is what we were doing and that we were wanting to, keep up with that momentum. And then I came across a photo project, that we ended up doing the Canadian version for, and that was through, CT Working Moms. And so they were doing a photo project that was all about this, that was speaking to, the safety, that was speaking to, this trying to stay away from judgment, that we all have different things that we're doing. So I had reached out to them, and it was really thrilling to me to see that on literally the other side of the continent, that there was a group of women who were also talking about this. So I reached out to them and said, "This is amazing. I love what you're doing. What do you think about a Canadian version of this message getting out there?" And so we went ahead and we moved forward with that, and they were excited about that. And then I saw a couple more kind of popping up in various places around the world. So I just got excited about this prospect that there is a way to do this. I think that difficult conversations and difficult topics and differing opinions, they happen and they must happen. We can't shy away from it, because essentially what I kind of came around to was that this isn't about us all holding hands and just being nice all the time, because that's not enough. It's not enough just to agree all the time. It's not enough also to stifle the knowledge that you have, or the education that you know, the expertise that you have developed over a certain amount of time. It's about being able to share this information and communicate in a way that is going to keep the table you know, keep the table going on with that discussion and keep and continue to get the topics shared. So I wanted to make sure that we were speaking to this grand idea of non-judgment, and also pulling in the fact that this doesn't necessarily mean that we are constantly hugging and singing Kumbaya, which is also lovely, but that we're talking, we're having real discussions. This isn't just all of us, you know, a bunch of people who all agree on everything, and then they're sitting there and agreeing on everything, you know, online as well. It's about having healthy conversations, which in my mind, a healthy conversation is a constructive one, and that is one that moves ideas forward. So it's not just, you know, feeding people the same information over and over again.
I love that. And it's not just about that confirmation bias that you're surrounding yourself with people and news and all of that, that really seeks to confirm what you already believe to be true. It's sort of challenging ourselves to think outside of our own status quo and to perhaps take on another through empathy or just even through the willingness to understand someone else to see things a little differently. So within your photo project, you had a variety of different people who thought, you know, on opposite spectrums in terms of really big red zone topics like sleep training, circumcision, sex, you know, and I mean, for some people it was about family dynamics and I'm not sure that you actually talked about things like domestic abuse and things like that, but I mean, those topics have come up in the parenting groups that you run online, and it's pretty incredible for those topics to have a place, and that we don't need to be banning people and booting people off of the pages because they want to talk about these really tricky topics. So I think that's what's so wonderful, is that you're providing sort of the safe space to explore these topics that can make people feel disconnected sometimes. And so I would really like to dig in a little bit into how these mom groups, the online groups that you run, really came about. So I know that, you know, you every so often I see you moderate some of the conversations by just reminding us that there's a human being on the other side of the computer, and that really we need to be mindful of that as we wade into these conversations. But I really want to talk about that yearly cohort that's distinguished by the positive M-based names like Magnetic and Magnificent and Mighty Moms. And I mean, I'd like to talk about it even from my perspective. I've joined these groups with both of my kids and felt tremendously supported. And I just want to, first of all, ask you how you came up with the idea of creating these specific mom groups that really were dedicated to that sense of belonging. And then how did you encourage and foster that positivity? And it's almost like a positivity-focused branding of the groups, because I think people know as they enter the groups that they'll feel a certain degree of support that they may not get from other online ones. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Certainly. So where it all started was shortly after my daughter was born. It was a couple of weeks after my daughter was born. I was fine. I was just feeling, honestly, when my daughter was first born, I found it so overwhelming. I was overwhelmed, just emotionally, physically. It was not a really smooth transition for me. I had lots of like breastfeeding was challenging, and you know, your body's doing all kinds of crazy things and all these kinds of things. And my background was in tech. I was very comfortable in online spaces, and I was at Mom and Babe, at Mothering Touch. And going there, I went there religiously every week. I could walk there from my house. And so I made sure to get out of the house and go. I started going when my daughter was 3 weeks old. And I just started to think, okay, well, this is fantastic, which it was. I mean, I'd usually go there and kind of end up, you know, crying or something, blubbering over for an hour or whatever. But then I would think, okay, well, then there was this week gap that I had to wait until I got to go back. And so then I had just asked if there was a space and if there was interest in me creating one. So I went ahead and started. And then I was thinking about ways, because I had gotten a certain amount of feedback about, oh, you know, are you sure you want to do that? Because online spaces can sometimes, you know, implode a little bit. And then sometimes there's a certain amount of nastiness. Yes. So I really started thinking about what are ways that we can build in that accountability, and build in that a certain amount of responsibility within the space. And so that's when I started going, okay, well, if we make it based on the birth year and on a specific geographic location, there's going to be a very good chance that we're going to run into each other in person. And so I thought, well, that would probably help to build the accountability. And also with it being based on the birth year, then we would be growing up as moms together at the same time that our children were. And that hopefully, you know, by the time our kids got to kindergarten and beyond, we will have it would kind of have this built-in empathy because we would be able to understand so many of the things that that the other women in our community were going through. So I had started it that way. And then as time went on, my daughter was born in 2012. And then my son, he was born in 2015. But as the time went on, of course, I mean, I make that point because obviously I don't have children born in all of the years since 2012.
Yes.
But people just being comfortable in the space had asked me to continue to build other groups. And so I just continued to do that. And then, it just kept on evolving. And I had such an interest in what the pieces were that were required in order to make safe discussion online. So I joined heaps of groups online on different platforms, and ones I had a personal affinity for, ones that I didn't. As topics would come up in the mom groups, I would join groups based on those topics to try and familiarize myself a little bit with the culture around, you know, some of those spaces as well, to kind of see how discourse in these other places went also.
Yes.
And I tried to pull some of those norms. I mean, I learned a lot, of course, because when I first started this, I didn't have a huge background in facilitating discussions or managing conflict or any of those sorts of things. But as time went on, I kept on, you know, I continued to build in some of the tools I was seeing being employed in some of these other communities as well. And then, of course, learning a tremendous amount from the moms, because at the end of the day, I see, while I did start these, I truly see this community as not being mine. It is the moms. And so I really follow the community's lead in terms of what makes discussion happen in a safe way. So I continue to try to make sure that those pieces are in place. And one of the biggest things I found over time is that if you look at all of the questions, the thousands and thousands and thousands of questions that are being posted on an ongoing basis, essentially what everyone is asking is, am I worthy? Am I okay? Please accept me. Please help. Mm-hmm. If you could put that lens over almost every single post that is contributed into a mom group, whether it happens to be one from the Mumble Network or any other group, essentially that is what we as human beings are asking. And so when you put that filter on everything that is being put out there, it's not very hard to get down to the guts of what it is that this person is asking. So even if someone is asking something or saying something in a way that maybe is harsh or has been worded in a way that you wouldn't necessarily do it, if you can put over that the lens that this person is reaching out for a reason, like this person needs some kind of help, if you can see through the way that they've written to down to that, then it's not so hard to kind of get down to the guts. And so I've tried to, when facilitating and moderating certain conversations that are a little bit more, if it happens to be going a little bit off the rails, I try to bring it back to that.
Yes.
And it generally diffuses the conversation quickly, because then that person feels heard.
Yes.
Which is why they reached out in the first place, whether they comment, whether they made the original post or they commented afterwards. They were just wanting to be heard.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think that's such a universal need that is really coming out of a lot of these interviews for the podcast as well. And I think that need to be heard, the need to really be understood as well. And again, that validation of worthiness is so key. I think we all just need to know that we are okay and that we belong and that we're, you know, and we want to communicate, we're really doing the best that we can. And I love that the group really does feel as though it's reinforcing those ideals. So I think the last count I did showed nearly 40 groups or something like that sort of spread across the country. Did you ever imagine that this would be so widespread? And I think about, like, I'd love to talk about Mumble and how that came out of these online groups and what it is. But why do you think these groups are so successful? And what do you, you've talked a little bit about the worthiness piece, but did you ever imagine that it would be so widespread?
No, I didn't. I never thought that was that this would grow as much as it had. I'd never set out in that way. When I first started these, I'd actually written the name of the group on the Facebook group on a little piece of paper, and I would hand it out to women who were pregnant or who were holding a little baby. I would join this. No, it didn't ever. It didn't ever occur to me. And I think part of the reason, I mean, it's been really fascinating over the last 6 years, watching the evolution of online discourse and the expectations and the kinds of things that are shared. And I think that one of the things that's been consistent about the groups in the Mumble network is that it's always been endeavoring to find, to find that place of empathy. That's always been kind of where we keep on trying to set our north at. So I think because of the fact that there are so many spaces online that aren't necessarily like that, because the way that online discourse happens to sometimes tends to play out online is that this, explosive discourse is sort of the culture online, and, yeah. And a certain amount of rage and that kind of thing. It's that falls under the heading of entertainment in some ways.
Absolutely. Yes.
So which I think, which in my mind, if that's how you want to go, I mean, by all means, but I don't think that necessarily comes back to actually getting you back to constructive conversations. Like, yeah. I don't constructive, not that there's anything wrong with anger or anything like that, but it's just about whether or not you're actually having what is coming out of that.
Yeah.
So I think part of the reason why, people have continued to come back to Mumble, and that the engagement has always stayed so high is because of that. The understanding that's always our true north. We are always trying to come back. We're always trying to put things in place to help the discussion be empathetic. Not that we're all trying to, I've never put limits on what topics that we're going to talk about or banned things or anything like that. It's not about that. The understanding is that everyone is an adult. Everyone is responsible for what they put into the world, whether it happens to be out in the real life or what they put out online. And I think that people do respond to that, and that they're adults and we respect that. And it just ends up feeling, it feels like home in that way.
Yes.
I think that's one of the things there.
Can you talk a little bit about Mumble and how it is different from the Facebook online groups and what your mission is with Mumble?
Sure. So Mumble, what it is a platform that connects online spaces. So Mumble evolved out of the mom groups because what was happening was I was having a lot of people reach out to me and wanting to post in various ways. So in 2016, I started to build out Mumble, and Mumble it has evolved and eventually evolved to being a place where people could post their anonymous posts. Because what was happening a lot was that people were reaching out to me, and it usually had to do with a diagnosis. So people were looking for advice, and they wanted to reach out and connect with other parents who were going through a particular diagnosis, most often for their children, but they didn't necessarily want to post that in a public way quite yet because they weren't ready to.
Yeah.
So it'd be questions about that. Usually it was around things like that, or if they had questions around a divorce or those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so it was getting to be it was kind of happening more often. And so then I focused Mumble on being a place where moms could post their anonymous questions, and in that way that would connect them to these online spaces. So this would be the online Facebook groups, and those are those that I administer. It would also be ones that have been that are admin by other communities kind of across the country. So it just continued to evolve there, and then as time has gone on, it has gone way beyond the kinds of questions that people would necessarily ask me to post on their behalf, because of course it's anonymous. So it's just become a way. I think it's become actually a really important first first stop, I think, for a lot of women that are able to ask questions that they do not, either they don't feel safe asking, they feel embarrassed to ask, they feel shame about asking, and they have never necessarily thought that they would be in this place to ask the question, whether it happens to be about domestic violence or it has to be about something happening with their bodies there's so many different questions that are asked about their marriage, about sex, about their children's behavior, all of these various things that that come out of that. And I think that as time goes on, as we become more and more aware of the importance of protecting our privacy, mm-hmm. And protecting not only our privacy, but that of our partners and our children and our communities, people are more and more moms are coming to post on Mumble so that way they can still get the insight from their community without necessarily having to attach their Facebook profile.
Yes.
Their other public profile to their question, which has become really important and really valuable in seeing as I see the questions that have been coming out.
And that's so, so wonderful, because I think you're right. It's when we are navigating these really difficult times in our lives, or like you said, unexpected times that we really aren't ready to identify with on a personal level, having that anonymity can be really a safe way to explore the topic without having to own it in a really public way. And like you said, in light of some of the recent social media privacy issues, obviously, you wouldn't want that to be tied to your person, you know, your personal profile. So I think that's such a great avenue for parents to, and moms specifically, to take to be able to explore these topics. So I often think about the fact that our society has difficulty stepping outside of the confines of our own assumptions. So in 2011, a book by Daniel Kahneman was written called the title's Thinking Fast and Slow. And he really encouraged people to become aware of their own biases. And he states that there's sort of these two levels of thinking. There's system one, which is fast, instinctive, and really emotional, based on that sort of lizard brain reaction. And then system two is slower, more deliberate, more logical. And so when we let our intuitive system take over, we're prone to making more damaging judgments about people, right? And making decisions that might be unkind, or, you know, we're just subject to that confirmation bias. So I'd argue that your projects really strive to challenge people to think a little bit beyond their assumptions of motherhood. What do you wish society at large knew about mothers? And what do you wish we knew about one another? And how do you think that challenging our sort of status quo or our assumptions might change the way we actually interact with one another?
Well,
there's a lot in there.
No, they're great questions. They're such great questions.
Thanks.
I think that, okay, the thing that was swirling around my mind as you were saying that, one of the things that I wish that people would take more to heart, I think, about moms is a similar thing that I would wish that people would take more to heart about all people, about all human beings, whether they happen to be, you know, our colleagues or our, you know, our peers or our children or anyone in our lives, is that essentially, we're all vying for the same thing. We are trying to avoid suffering and we are trying to find happiness. Mm-hmm. That is what we are all doing all day long. And that's not my thing. That's like a very Buddhist kind of way of framing it. But it is, that's what we're all doing. It's just that we don't necessarily all have the best models or the best habits formed around trying to employ those ends. Mm-hmm. So the ways that we might gravitate to avoid suffering maybe aren't actually the things that are going to help us avoid suffering in the long run. And same thing with happiness, the kinds of things that we think will make us, you know, happy in the short term, they aren't necessarily, it's not necessarily sustainable. So I think that if we could just stop and take a beat before we happen to leap in to emotional response about any number of things that happen to go out, it would solve so many issues. Like I've got a lot of, I have several volunteers who volunteer for the Mumble communities that help to moderate the communities. And one of the things that we talk about is that I say, if my hands are still shaking, I don't I don't respond. So yes. that's one of my physical ways of kind of going, oh my goodness, I am unsettled. I do not know. If I'm still shaking, it means that I'm still in a very kind of physical, I'm responding in a very emotional way still. So just wait until you can find common ground with whatever it is that anything that someone is saying, until you can find common ground with the person sitting across from you, wait. That means you haven't thought about it enough.
Yes.
You haven't tried. We all have common. We all have way more in common with each other than not. Even for those people who make decisions that we would never, ever make, mm-hmm. we would hope or we would think that we would never, ever make, we still have more in common with that person than not.
Absolutely. I am nodding my head vigorously right now. I totally agree. And I think, I just had a really close girlfriend who has two children, and she just asked for some advice because, anyway, long story short, there's just a situation where she felt like because of her son's sort of medical background that he's being treated inequitably, and she's so like very, very angry about it, and rightfully so, I think, in this situation. And she was asking, what do I do? And I said, draft the email in Word, don't send it, sleep on it. And then you can sort of do your research in the meantime, get the feelings out and don't press send quite yet. Because I think you're right. Sometimes when we're in that state of mind, we just want vengeance, or we just want to somehow, employ anger to make it better. And it never does. It always makes it worse. So I think just like you said, just being able to sort of take a moment before you jump on the keyboard and write or respond when you're feeling that way is so incredibly important. And also that connection piece. We are so connected. So if we can really strive to see what connects us as we interact with one another, that I think you're right. I think the interactions themselves will be very, very different. And I think about that as an educator and the way that even I interact with moms and how that has even changed and evolved as I've had my own children. Because I think in the back of my head, when I was starting out as a teacher, I always thought that more was more, more homework, more this. This is what parents want. And really, as a parent now, I'm going, oh my goodness, could we just drop a ball, please? There's so much going on, right? And so how do you think schools can be supporting your message of unity and understanding? And do you think schools are doing a good job of acknowledging the challenges associated with motherhood? How do you think we can improve?
I think that... I've had, my daughter is in, just finished up with kindergarten, and we've had a really fantastic experience with her first year of education. And I think it ends up coming back to remembering that, that the person that you're dealing with, is a human being and is dealing with, their own kind of hopes and fears and those sorts of things on their side. So I think it kind of one framework that I find very very useful for myself is something called nonviolent communication. Mm. And one of the things about that process, which I think is very interesting, is to go through to do kind of like a quick check on yourself, which is observing what's happening, what are the feelings that you're having, what do you need, and then also doing it on the behalf of the person that you're working with as well. So. What do they observe as happening? What are their feelings and what are their needs? Mm-hmm. And I think that as educators do more and more of that, understanding that the way that the place that the parent is coming from is a place of vulnerability in a very big way, because the love that we have for our children is just the world. I mean, it's endless. And what we are trying to do is we're trying to do what's best for them. We are trying to make sure that they have everything that they need. And we don't necessarily know what those things are. And we are having to relinquish a lot of control over to an educator who is now one of the most significant people in our child's life. Mm-hmm. So we held that role for a long time. And now the educators in our kids' life, now they hold that position. And I think that if understanding that the parents are coming from a place of vulnerability and a certain amount of fear and perhaps a certain of you know, the not complete understanding that they're coming from that place. Mm-hmm. I think that, that can really help and go a long way, because I think that, you know, people aren't necessarily at their best when they're coming from a place of fear, and they aren't able to get to the heart of what it is that they're wanting, or the support that they're needing, or those sorts of things. So I think educators have a really big job, because not only are they educating our children and getting these close relationships with so many different kids, to be able to help them grow and learn and do all the things that they're capable of, they're also managing these relationships with parents.
Yes. And also seeing that vulnerability not as a threat, because yes, sometimes that's how it presents. We put our armor up, and like you said, our kids are really a huge part of our life. It's like our heart walking outside of our bodies, right? And so to be able to build the trust with the parents is incredibly important. And I think a lot of that is being able to see it through the lens of this vulnerability piece, as you said. And vulnerability has come up so many times throughout the course of these interviews, because I think it's the one thing that sort of ties us together. And Dr. Brené Brown, who I wind up talking about quite a bit, has said that, you know, we are all seeking vulnerability within one another, and yet it's that thing that we're so reticent to actually show, because it puts us in sort of quote unquote that feeling of being weak. And so when we can just kind of level the playing field and we're all just able to sit within our vulnerability and that integrity and see and honor one another within that it's really powerful stuff. So I think that trust is really built through that vulnerability, also from the teacher standpoint, and just being able to back down a little bit too.
And I think if I can just jump in with one, I think that the one thing that goes a really long way is validating the person that you're standing across from. Mm-hmm. And so when someone is saying something to you, even saying it back, saying, "I can hear you are feeling this. It sounds like you're feeling this. It sounds like you're saying this." And doing that, going through that exercise, it may sound, as I'm saying it to you right now, it may sound a little bit plastic and a little bit kind of, you know, choppy, but honestly, it is the best feeling in the world. I mean, imagine standing across from your partner when you're having an argument with them, having them say to you, "It sounds like you're feeling scared." Yeah. I mean, immediately, all of it, it's impossible. It's impossible to be angry in that moment. If you have someone, even if they're wrong, the fact that they are trying to understand what you're feeling, it's this most beautiful bridge. And it just makes you want to share more, because even if you say, "No, it's not that I feel scared, it's that I feel this," then you're getting somewhere. Then you are creating that common ground where someone can go, "Okay, I see you.
Yes.
I see you now.
Yes.
And let me tell you now where I'm coming from." And then it's a beautiful thing. I have seen it so many times in the mom communities where things have in Mumble, in Facebook, in so many different platforms, as people's things start to escalate, and then just being able to articulate that this person has pain, it diffuses things so quickly.
So that's such an important point, for sure. That validating. I want to talk a little bit about the fear piece and relate it a bit to your own experience with Mumble, with the online community building. And I've often thought about the challenges associated with administrating such a large number of groups, and how time consuming and demanding it could be. Like, I've often thought about you, Shauna, in real time, just going, how on earth are you keeping on top of all of this? And being able to sort of, you know, have your hand in so many different pots and somehow be a mom and be a businesswoman. And it must be so difficult to uphold the intent behind the group and really, I don't know, like it, aspects of some of the issues that come up must weigh on you on some level. So I guess I'm wondering, what are some of the surprising challenges that have come out of your own journey with Mumble and the M Mom groups and sort of being able to create this huge community, but some of the challenges that have come up for you and how you've worked through those?
I think one of the things that I end up coming back to a lot is remembering that empathy does not mean carrying someone's load for them. I think this is something that I definitely struggled with for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Because you're right, some of the stuff. I mean, I have the great honor and also sometimes the great heartbreak and responsibility to hold space for people sharing some pretty tough stuff. And it can be definitely it can be challenging to process. I mean, it ends up challenging some of my you know thoughts about things. And when you're understanding that that these things are happening kind of in our community, but essentially what I have tried to come back to is that and I'm not always great at it, by the way. This is in theory, but I've sort of made some progress on this. But again, remembering that it's my role is to hold space. My role is to help or, articulate and see things from the other side. So, on the conflict management side of things, my role is not to carry everything for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important. And that's a tenet that I've taken through, that I think has been really valuable throughout my entire, it's kind of come through in all kinds of areas of my life. So when I am holding space for some of these things, not just me, our entire community is holding space for each other. Mm-hmm. Is remembering that, the piece that I can do is to help facilitate and to help give access to resources and to kind of help educate. That is my role. So I think that that's an important thing. But also one of the things that I've gotten a lot better with as well is setting up those boundaries. So it used to be that I would be awake at 6 and I'm doing stuff, and then as I'm falling asleep at 11 or so, that would be the last thing I would do at night.
Yeah.
And my phone stays home. Now my phone stays downstairs, away from my bedroom. I've actually bought an alarm clock to help me with this boundary setting. But setting those things up. And I think as well, I mean, as time has gone on, there's been a certain amount of, I've just come around to being able to see what I can, that any one person can only process so much.
Yeah.
So it is not reasonable for me to work 18 hours a day. That's not healthy for anybody.
No. And then, and I think something has to give, right? So it's an interesting thing, because I think when you're creating something like this, you sometimes have to front end load that time and really pour a lot of yourself into it. And so creating that balance for yourself can be challenging, right? Especially as a mom, where you have many different people kind of vying for your attention and your needs. And how did you kind of make space for yourself and sort of hold that really, just basically be able to do that in such a way that it was non-negotiable, that you had this time for yourself, or what is it that you even did to sort of fill your cup back up, I guess?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I did was that I had enough instances where I didn't do a very good job of that. Mm-hmm. And looking at what that felt like, and going through that, because like you say, I mean, when some of this stuff can be really difficult and hard. And then I was noticing that I was not being fully present. Mm-hmm. At dinner. I wasn't being totally present with my partner, with my children, I wasn't being fully present. And then dealing with, like the guilt and realizing that this is not acceptable. This is not okay. Mm-hmm. So what happened is that I, as we all do, I think I reorganized my priorities, and I realized that there were chunks of time for work. And then there's chunks of time for my family and for my kids and for my partner and for my life and my life outside of Mumble, and, starting to get a lot more secure in that, I think. I mean, I'm turning 40 this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that I have one of the beautiful and just fantastic things about getting older is that in some ways, like those boundaries, it's not even hard to set them up sometimes in some ways, because I have enough life experience to know that I that me putting 8 more hours into XYZ is not actually going to move that particular thing forward. I mean, I've gotten a lot more efficient with my time, and a lot, I have much higher expectations, I think, for my my life outside work. I think mm-hmm. that I had a lot of my identity wrapped up in work for a very, very long time. And as time goes on, I started to realize that that is nothing without my mental and physical health. And that at the end of the day, there are things that are incredibly, incredibly important. And that's my children and my family. So
yes, I think that's a really, it's a good conversation to have around this, because I think sometimes we get this sense that we can do it all, and we try to, and I think you can do it for a season, but if it's season yeah. after season after season, something's yeah. got to give, and it can take a toll. And I appreciate you sharing that with us, because I think sometimes we can get sort of this illusion that success is somehow always perfectly in balance, that person who is sort of experiencing success or is sort of doing these really big things is always feeling balanced and feeling great and everything's going perfectly well. And I think when you really uncover that, it's sometimes a process, and it's a learning journey, right? Of creating an element of balance, because I don't even know if we can ever be fully in balance, right? There's always something that's pulling us in different directions, but it's important to talk about it and the yeah. realities of taking these types of projects on. So what advice would you give to, you know, aspiring entrepreneurs, perhaps mothers who wish to make the world a better place by creating an online presence or some kind of business product? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say go for it. Good for you. Very exciting. So that'd be the first thing. I would say surround yourself with people who are going to who are going to challenge you, who are going to ask really good questions, and who are going to be there with you to continue to kind of to work out the kinks and to figure out what you're going to do. I would say, there's such great material on this. Like, anytime reach out to me, I love this stuff. Make sure, like, start small and start now. Like, don't worry about, like, this isn't something that you need to launch 3 years from now.
Yes.
Whatever it is figure out. There's so many free platforms, free software, there's so many different things that are out there. So just get out and start the 5 minute version of whatever it is that you're wanting to get in the direction of. Start it tomorrow. Why not? Launch it, get going, start to get your feet wet. I went to this really great panel. It was last year sometime, and there was a bunch of, it was entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And there was one woman, she has a health tech company, and she has an engineering background. And one of the things that she said was, she's like, listen, I'm an engineer. She says, you know, sometimes I can kind of be, engineers have a tendency to be, they can be kind of pessimistic. These are her words, but she mm-hmm. said, she goes, my perspective is, she's like, it's not going to work anyway, so you may as well just do it. Like, just launch. She goes, because then it's not going to work. And then you can figure out what part of it isn't working, and then you can fix it so it'll work.
That's so great.
Get it out there, which I thought is brilliant and so accurate. I would just say, just start and do not isolate yourself. Talk to people, surround yourself with people, constantly be asking questions, get it out there, and just start.
I love that. I think that's so important. And I think sometimes people are waiting for license or are waiting for the permission to do it from other people. And I think sometimes you just have to follow that little thread of inspiration and just go for it. And you may not have the full meal deal, you know, roadmap in your head of where you're going, you know, and how you're going to get there. But I think if your why is really strong and you feel compelled to explore something, follow that string, because I think every opportunity that comes out of that, sort of that action behind the inspiration, that really there's some really unexpected things that can come out of it. And that's very much where the value comes out of following those ideas, is you never know where it's going to take you. And it's very, very exciting.
Absolutely.
So I, before we get to sort of the rapid fire questions at the end, I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the wonderful projects and events and even the community support that have come out of the online mom group. So I'm sure you're aware of a number of different ones. And I'd love to talk about, there's one particular little girl in my 2016 group. Her name is Zoe and her mom, Vivienne. Yes. And she has started a page called Small But Mighty Zoe, and her daughter was diagnosed with a devastating rare degenerative disease that will really affect her mobility over time. And the treatment wasn't covered by insurance and the family couldn't afford to pay, you know, the hundreds and thousands of dollars really that the treatment would cost. And so she reached out to the group and received an outpouring of support and encouragement, and the media caught wind of the efforts, and the families received, you know, the go ahead to start treatment with some financial support from a number of different stakeholders. And there's been a lot of sort of ad hoc GoFundMe efforts to just to be able to raise enough money for them to do the travel. And so the nature of the group is to be kind and supportive, and we've had amazing instances of outpouring and support and in the face of you know, medical issues and family loss, miscarriage, divorce. And are there any sort of heartwarming or memorable stories that stand out for you as a result of these groups?
Oh, so many. So many times I walk away from the computer or something and I've got tears in my eyes because of the incredibly beautiful things that people do, from like what you're talking about with Zoe and the huge groundswell of support that came up there, to there was a single mom who came on, and she said, I don't know who did it, but it was at Christmas time, and somebody had wrapped presents and left them on her doorstep. Aww. And she didn't know who it was. But she said there was a whole bunch of presents. And so her little one had presents for Christmas, which she wasn't sure how she was going to be able to do.
That's incredible.
It's so beautiful to people posting about postpartum depression and being scared, and how many times moms will say, they will post their phone number, you know, please message me anytime, please reach out. So many times people posting, even just saying, they weren't even necessarily asking for help. They were just saying, I can't believe it. You know, this and this happened, and I have an appointment and I can't get there, and I'm just having the worst day. Thank you for listening. And then people facilitating rides of someone that they had never necessarily met before, but then they go and pick them up and they drive them to their appointment. It's just again, moms are just, they're warriors. I mean,
yes,
the things that women do when they come together, and it's just, it's incredible. And we could sit here all day. And
yes. Exactly.
How many beautiful things have come out of these moms coming together, and, you know, again and again and again. I'm so honored to stand beside them.
For me personally, it's been a tremendous help. And I know many of my friends and even people who I've met as a result of the groups have become good friends and have really benefited as well. Could you define what kindness means to you?
Love.
What book or books have you gifted most often to people?
I give very often Wherever You Go, There You Are by Jon Kabat-Zinn, and also Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg.
What one skill or superpower does a teacher need to lead with in order to be effective?
Empathy.
What about for a principal? Is it the same or different?
It's the same.
Thank you so much for doing this interview with me, Shauna. This has been so great. I've really appreciated talking to you and digging into these really, really important topics. I think everybody should be thinking about these things, and I think especially educators, as we interact with parents and remembering that they always are doing their best, and so are we. And I think when we really lead with compassion, that some really great conversations and middle ground can be found whenever there's conflict or the potential for it.
I agree.
This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number.
Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag #SmallActBigImpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.